Hi, this is Stuart Corrigan from Vanguard, and tonight we're going to be talking about innovation and problem solving, and I have Brona Kernan on the phone. Brona's currently the IT director with Zurich Ireland, and she was formerly the IT director with Ryanair, and she's going to talk to us tonight about Ryanair's approach to problem solving and innovation, which I think you'll find incredibly enjoyable and informative. So, hi Brona.
Hi Stuart.
How are you doing?
Good, yeah, very good.
Good. So let's start with, you know, your journey at Ryanair. You were there from literally day one, is that correct?
Yes, I was recruited in, if I remember right, it was June 1994. Up to that point, Ryanair had started as a sort of full-service airline going in and out of the UK. It was trying to compete with the state carrier, and it was not a time of open competition. In 1994, the investors in the airline recruited a new chief executive with a new vision based on the US model, which was that there would be a more of an open skies and competitive marketplace. And back then in the US, the fastest growing airline was an airline called Southwest, which operated on a low cost model. So the investors decided that they would reshape this airline and take advantage of this new way that Europe was going to open up.
Okay.
New chief executive, Michael O'Leary, who everybody knows, and then Michael recruited me and a few other senior managers.
And what was the strategy at that particular time? What was the thing that was going to differentiate this airline from every other airline?
Well, the thing that was going to differentiate Ryanair, and it has never changed, and I'm actually looking at their website today, they said we will get you there cheaper, more reliably. And it has never changed since then. It's the lowest fares airline.
And I assume, therefore, if we talk about innovation and problem solving, that must have just been in the DNA of the airline then, was it? Because to make sure that you're always cheap and to make sure that you're always reliable, I guess you just have to be constantly solving problems, do you?
Absolutely. I mean, so the beauty of it was the strategic focus was very, very clear. Every time you encountered an issue, you were quite clear about which strategy you would take to get yourself. You basically always had to look at your costs, and you always had to look at reliability, and it was unwavering as to what, because that was the USP of the airline. And lost bags is the third one.
So it was cost, it was reliability, and it was lost bags. That was the main focus.
Absolutely.
So tell me a bit about how that played out on a day-to-day basis, that how everybody kept their focus on those three things.
Okay. Well, for cost, the sort of strategic objective at cost was very much a sweat the asset and the most simplest operating model. So sweat the asset would be that you had an aircraft. You had to fly that aircraft as much as you could. So a low-cost airline will fly to secondary airports. That means they don't get into long taxiing in and out of big airports. They will turn an aircraft around in 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that way, in sort of over an eight-hour period, they'll have an extra leg flown. They operate single fleet, so they can interchange crews and routes at the drop of a hat, because every aircraft carries the same number of passengers, so they can redirect an aircraft to solve a problem. Reliability, they constantly analyze on a daily basis the issues that were raised the day before that reduced reliability or on-time performance. And they will constantly drill into the root cause of that, because, and what they can affect, they will affect. So it's a zero tolerance. They will never let it go. You will never hear that a plane was late due to the inbound arrival of the other plane. What caused the delay?
That must mean that, you know, there was quite a lot of problems to capture every single day. I mean, I'm assuming it wasn't you weren't just capturing one problem a day. How was that done?
If software tracked every flight and there would be reason codes for delays, now the software would be smart enough to know that, flight two is late because of flight one, and the root cause of all of this is flight one. So don't bother looking at flight two and flight three. So it would be clever enough to do that for you. The other thing they always did was they designed into the schedule what they call a fire break in the middle of the day, which means if the more they tend to have two sort of parts of the day, 6 to 2 and then 2 to 10. And they tend to keep a fire break in there so they can try and remediate issues. And in aviation, you have a lot of challenges that aren't in your control. So you know that you will potentially carry something from that morning onward. So the fire break is to allow you to catch up. But they would go back at the root cause. And if it was something that they can affect, they will affect it and they will stop it happening again and they will measure it.
And how do you get around, you know, the politics? Because, you know, I can hear people on the phone listening to this at the moment saying, oh, but you couldn't move that fast in our industry because we'd have to go to committee and go to audit and write reports and all of these things. I mean, let's be honest, if things go wrong in an airline, I mean, people's lives are at stake. So what do you say to people that say, oh, we couldn't possibly do change that quickly?
Well, what we did ourselves would be, the initial model was the 10 737s we had, and we trialled the low-cost model in the Irish-English operation and going in and out of secondary airports. You know, you'd have had Glasgow Prestwick, you'd have had Stansted. There weren't very busy airports, so we weren't going to have a lot of people in our way in the first place, and we were the most dominant airline, so we were able to shape the operation of the airline operators, as well, airport operators as well. So the way we would then go to bigger airports, when we encountered that sort of an issue, like you can't do that, it would be, yes, we can. We can do that. We can operate that way. And Ryanair would work very closely with its regulator. I mean, it is a highly regulated business, and, you know, people don't understand that and appreciate it, but it would challenge a norm without losing the essence of the regulation. You know, the essence.
So I guess what you're saying is two things. One is run lots of experiments to prove the point, and then say, well, you know, we've already proved the point through very quick, low cost, low risk experiments. Now let's take that norm to the committee or the audit or the regulator. Let's work closely with those guys and say, we've proved the point, now let's change the industry rules.
Yeah, let's change the industry rules. Let's work together to change the rules. And because it was an Irish airline and we did have an Irish regulator as well, you know, it was probably a little bit easier, you know. The regulator was doing their job, but if you're a small Irish airline trying to do with the UK regulator, it would have been a different issue. It would have been discounted and British Airways' voice would have been bigger. We would have been discounted.
But it's still kind of, in a sense, laughs in the face of the excuse like, oh, well, we couldn't possibly challenge internal audit. I mean, you guys were challenging not just internal audit, you're challenging national, nationwide rules and the regulator to get things done.
Yeah, and what we also did, though, is we worked within the rules. We just found new ways to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would look at the regulation, and if the regulation, say, pilot's hours are 800 hours a month, we didn't break that regulation. But we made sure that the aircraft turned around in 25 minutes. We made sure we didn't waste time of pilots transiting to aircraft.
Yeah.
You know, we made sure that everything was working to its optimum. So of the hours worked by a pilot, by and large, the majority of them were flying and not hanging around. You know.
Right. Yeah. So in other words, we were very clear on the goal of this business, and I think often a lot of people get confused about this issue. So you're saying the goal of this business is have airlines in the air. And I think often, as I say, people get confused about that. You know, they forget what is it we're actually trying to do and what constitutes a unit of our purpose or a unit of our goal.
Yeah, it was very clear within the DNA of the company that people only bought our flights because we had the lowest fare.
Yeah.
We only had the lowest fare if we watched the costs, and particularly the costs that mattered. So
yeah,
you can go on to the Ryanair.com now, and you can even look at their investor presentations, and you'll see even in their presentations they rank the costs that influence the drivers in that business.
Yeah.
The fuel would be one. Productivity is another. So staff productivity right through the business influences the costs within that.
So in other words, there's a really good relationship and understanding between the inputs and the outputs.
Absolutely.
For
the operating model,
tell me then, what do you feel that there was there for absolute clarity in terms of how operations connects to the strategy and what decisions need to be made on a day-to-day basis in order to deliver that strategy? Is that really the big differentiator here?
Absolutely. And I also think, so it started with clarity. There was clarity as to what the strategic goals and objectives were. And there weren't many. They were not confusing. They were quite straightforward.
Yeah.
We will be the cheapest, and we will be the most reliable. And that was absolutely clear. Then they would work their way from that. How are we going to be the cheapest? What are the cost drivers in this business? Aircraft, major cost driver. Aircraft utilization.
Brilliant.
So therefore, we would change the operating model. So I think you probably remember the days when you got your boarding card and you wandered through an airport and the aircraft was there waiting for the people. If you fly on a Ryanair aircraft, the people are at the boarding gate waiting for the aircraft. And the aircraft pulls in, it empties its passengers, the safety checks are all done, and the passengers are reloaded. The number four air hostess will come off the aircraft and she will be part of the onboarding procedures. The three cabin crew left will be part of the onboarding at the aircraft. Constantly challenging the operation. So therefore, if you take someone off the aircraft and their objective is to turn it around in 25 minutes, because that wouldn't necessarily be a ground staff's objective.
Yeah.
She will ensure the ground staff are doing their job, or he, sorry, to be sexist, will be ensuring that the ground staff are getting that aircraft turned around while the people on the aircraft, they're all paid as well. Then the other motivator for productivity employees, people's pay is aligned to those strategic objectives.
So tell me a little bit about how the pay worked every month.
Okay, so if you had an influencer and you were an influencer into something like on time and reliability, and I was in IT, we had huge influence because the aircraft couldn't push back if the systems weren't up. We had productivity pay, and if we hit our metrics, we were paid for it. And if the company didn't hit our metrics, we weren't paid for it. And we were bonused again on certain levels of metrics hit over a consistent period. And that went right down to baggage handlers, check-in desks, air crew. Pilots would have a fuel burn metric, so there's optimal fuel burn. And then there's obviously if they have weather and things like that, they have to take on excess fuel, obviously, for safety reasons, and they can be impacted by weather and things like that. But that will be averaged out over time, so they will know what a pilot's fuel burn is over time.
Yeah.
And they would pay pilots based on fuel burn. Now, some of the things that influence fuel burn is how fast air traffic control will let you get up into cruise. That's something a pilot can influence. If he can get up to 20,000 feet fast, he can influence his fuel burn. And that's not breaching safety.
So the point is these are not just arbitrary things. These are things that you directly, based on your behavior, your processes, your policies, your innovation, and your problem solving, can have an influence on. It's not just an arbitrary number. It's something that actually you can influence.
You can influence it, yeah.
Yeah.
And where you were an influencer. Sorry, yeah?
No, go on.
Yeah. So where you were an influencer, you would be more weighted in your pay and productivity to influencer. So even in IT, you wouldn't think necessarily we were influencers in certain areas. But for example, you know, we were innovating. A, going online was a huge innovation because we were opening up call centers. Our cost of sales, our cost of distribution, we were moving into language. Going online was to solve that problem. It wasn't, it was solving that problem. How did we reach people in multi-language without standing up hundreds of call center operators? Similarly, web check-in. You know, you went through an airport and you realized that, you know, 70% of the people in the queue didn't have a bag. What really were they achieving by checking in? So we brought in a check-in. So we had huge influencing in the operation again that reduced cost. You know, we did have less check-in staff, less check-in desks. That would introduce cost, keep us as the lowest fare airline in the market. So, and we would be bonused on that.
And I think what's interesting about this is often people talk about problem solving and they talk about innovation and they just hope that innovation will appear. You know what I mean? They hope that people will get into quality circles and they'll come up with ideas rather than saying, look, the strategy is this. Therefore, every decision we make on the ground has to fit in with this strategy. Here are the problems that we're experiencing. Here's the number one problem. And therefore, what you have is, the way that I describe it, is a context for problem solving, not simply looking for people to come up with staff suggestion schemes and random ideas.
I always feel when you see an advertisement for a head of innovation, don't join the company. Because innovation comes from within. It is no more genius than really solving a problem, seeing a need, grasping maybe a new technology. You notice from my world, you're noticing a new technology and you have a problem and you're seeing a new technology and you're going, gosh, this could really be an influencer on this. So in a technology space, you can see an innovative technology could help be a solution to your problem, i.e. innovate the solution. But you can't, you must innovate from within. You can't bring in the innovation. Innovation is solving your problems.
Correct. So tell us about some of the cool things that, you know, that people came up with, some of the great problems that seem on the face of it might be obvious, but were driven by this innovative approach.
Well, like in the early days when we were flying into these secondary airports, you know, and really they were one-horse town type airports, you know, and the aircraft could be delayed by waiting for the guy who had three other jobs to push back the aircraft. Because he was also probably doing three other jobs. It was a small operation. So the pilots would have come up with the scenario, well, we are the only show in town here. We are the only aircraft. Why are we going nose into this building? Why don't we drive in and as we drive in, turn the aircraft to point out again?
So
we have no delays on pushback because we don't need to be pushed back. We're pointing outward. We'll go back out. The other thing is every Ryanair aircraft, which was a Ryanair innovation, is fitted with a front steps inbuilt into the aircraft. So again, they can start unloading that aircraft the minute the gate is open for them to unload passengers to. They don't have to wait for the guy who's going to drive the rear stairs around or the front stairs because they have front stairs. So those would have been innovations where people would have been going, what was the problem in the airport? Oh, we were waiting for a guy with the stairs. They would have been going, okay, put a stairs on the aircraft.
So what you're saying is when you ordered the fleet of 737, you wouldn't say, I want a standard 737. You say, I want a 737 and I want the steps built in.
We designed the steps with Boeing.
First airline
to put steps on their aircraft.
Wow.
So they didn't come
that's
with.
Fantastic.
They went to Boeing and said, you know, we need steps in our aircraft.
Brilliant.
So then the configuration of the aircraft as well, the seating to make sure to get 189 passengers into that aircraft. You know, it is, I won't say that Ryanair is the most comfortable airline, but most sectors are not longer than 2 hours. It's not a long-haul aircraft.
Yeah.
They also took the, another innovation they had was turning aircraft around at night for maintenance. One of the biggest things that broke was, you know, the little button on the side of the seat and you push your seat back? seat back reclining was breaking, and that would put a seat also out of commission, because if the seat recliner was broken and it was broken in a reclined position, you couldn't fly as anyone in the seat because they couldn't take off. So it took reclining out of ability out of the seats.
Right.
And apparently there is an anecdote, I should have looked it up, that somebody in American Airlines or something, the chief executive, was laughing at this, and then somebody pointed out to him they spent about $5 million a year fixing seat reclining.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
What a
great story. And as you say, I guess, the key is about what matters to the customer. Well, if the customer knows that they've paid a cheap fare to get someplace quickly on time, and they're only going to be on that plane for an hour or 90 minutes, does it really matter to them whether the seat reclines a lot or not? They're not flying across the Atlantic,
and
are they?
And because what really matters to them is they will be on time. They will not be doing a figure of eight over Heathrow Airport for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
They will be on time, you know.
Yeah.
And they can pretty much guarantee it.
And just going back to problems for a second before we wrap up and finish, how much do you think, if you got a group of leaders or a group of managers in a room and you said to them, what are the top problems that as an airline you need to be working on at the moment, how much do you think they'd all be congruent of what the top problems are versus kind of not being sure? And they might have their own ones, but they wouldn't be sure about what somebody else's were. And how much was that really in the, again, deeply embedded in the culture of the business?
I think airlines, when Ryanair stood up, had, if you had got a group of managers in there, you would have got varying opinions. Airlines had become, they had lost the fact that they were actually there to service travel and for people to get from A to B, that actually was the underlying objective. And the more people that travelled, the more safely, the more successful they were. They had totally lost that as their sort of USP. It had almost become too much that travelling was a luxury, not a necessity maybe. And travelling could, you know, that it was a luxury and it was an expensive thing and people saved up to do it. And, you know, that the experience on the plane became totally superseded by the function of what somebody was trying to achieve. And it's not that you should have a bad experience. You shouldn't have a bad experience, but the number one objective is actually get me from A to B safely on time in a level of comfort that's acceptable, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what Ryanair came to the market with. We're very clear here.
And does that mean that if you got a bunch of Ryanair managers in a room, they would generally all be clear on what problems needed to be fixed?
Absolutely. I mean, the clarity was so clear, the discussion wouldn't even venture in certain places.
Right.
Because the unsaid would be like, I don't know why we're discussing this. The relevance of what we were trying to achieve was constantly repeated, constantly reminded, was in your pay package, was, you know, the mantra of the organization, was put up and was celebrated. You know, we got a new on-time number this month that would be celebrated around the organization, would be on the TVs, you know.
And what advice would you give to, because that, you know, as a consultant, one of the things that I try my hardest to bring to a business is that clarity in terms of what's the strategy, what is the operation trying to deliver, what measures do you need to tell you what needs to be delivered, what are the key things you need to focus on, what are the top problems to be solved. What's your advice to managers who, you know, potentially don't have that level of clarity, who are not thinking in the way that clearly you've been trained to think?
Sometimes sometimes if I'm confused myself, I really try and put myself in the role of a customer and say, if I'm coming to this business, what is it I'm asking of this business really? What is it I really need of this business? And then I would try and put myself in the manager's shoes and saying, am I making sure what I am doing is really what's delivering value to mm-hmm. the people who are trying to purchase the service and need mm-hmm. the service and require the service, because otherwise you're kind of dead because somebody else will do better than you anyway.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, that's what I would say, is go back out to the customer, be the customer, forget all your internal DNA, forget all your internal politics. What is it that they're asking of you? What is their expectation of you? You know, and then make sure that that's what you're doing.
Good advice. And one final question then. What do you reckon are the market forces now that may be causing Ryanair to once again potentially reinvent themselves or change their own model?
Well, the big thing about Ryanair was that it was in what we call customer acquisition mode. So it was always in our DNA that we were first to market in the market, and the model that seems to follow at low cost is he who is in first gets 70% of it and keeps it. But they also mm-hmm. grew, the also thing was they would grow the market, because mm-hmm. there was the size of the market in certain areas was quite small because the price point was so high. So when you brought in a low cost carrier to it, you grew that market as well, and you held it. Now Ryanair is totally pan-European. There is nowhere to grow. I mean, Russia really would be the next space, and I don't think with the way politics work now they are. So they would be the biggest carrier in Italy, in Poland. You know?
I think they're
the biggest domestic carrier in the UK.
Okay.
So they're now in what you call customer retention mode. There isn't any winning new passengers is not as easy. So they have to work on that experience. And also, now low-cost airline is de facto, and the price point is de facto. €59 is the price point. That's not cheap anymore. Everybody else is €59. Well, they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, Ryanair still would be. But the other airlines might have an entry fare. So they do have to work on the experience a bit. Because the bar is a bit higher on the experience, but they will do it in, and you know, there's easy wins for Ryanair in that you can be nicer. That doesn't cost you, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the extra handbag, you know, and I can see it in the operation, which, you know, they would have had to take on the chin. I can see the onboarding of the aircraft a bit slower. So I know they'll be with the extra bag that they're allowing someone, I know they'll be watching that constantly to see how they can improve it. You know,
I guess it's just a little added dimension to the strategy, which again just runs right back into what do we do on the ground to influence mm-hmm. that metric.
Exactly. If they can do something about organizing people, I can see that they watch people. I've watched them onboarding the aircraft, and I can see they watch people, and they start approaching them nice. They can see before they even start to open the flight to board it that they know they've too much carry-on baggage, and they'll start to approach people in advance to see if they can organize it, because they've got to get the aircraft round in 25 minutes.
Constantly being proactive. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Well, that... I mean, you know, any manager listening to this, I'm sure they'll go, wow, you know, that was just some amazing advice around clarity of strategy, clarity of operations, clear on your top problems, really focusing on getting to the root cause. Thanks very much for your time. Absolutely fabulous interview. I really appreciate it.
No, you're very welcome, Stuart. Okay.
Okay. Cheers, Rona. Thank you very much. Bye.